This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., Booker T. Washington, Marian Anderson, just a few of the powerful examples of African-American self-determination and dignity that we hear about each Black History Month, and pretty much only then. How about Bass Reeves, one of the most successful lawmen of the Old West? Marshall Taylor, at one time the fastest cyclist in the world? Or Richard Potter, for whom the New Hampshire town of Potter Place is named? These are some of the unsung figures we learn about in Strange Fruit, Uncelebrated Narratives from Black History, Volume 1. It's a graphic novel with words and pictures by my guest, Joel Christian Gill. He's also Associate Dean of Student Affairs at the New Hampshire Institute of Art. And Joel Christian Gill, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, so glad you're here. Now, you grew up in the South. You later did come to Boston for grad school. What did you know of Black history growing up?
This is funny because, you know, when you grow up in the South, I actually thought my mom marched on Washington.
Didn't everybody?
I know. It was one of those things where, because when she talked about, you know, when she talked about the civil rights movement, she talked about like being in the middle of it. And I realized later that my mom actually lived a really sheltered life because my grandparents had a farm and she never went to town. So it was one of those things that just sort of it made me think that my mom was a part of it. And so growing up in the South, you know, you get Martin Luther King, W.E.B. Du Bois, Mary Bethune, you know, just some random people. But, you know, I'm trying to start a thing called hashtag 28 days are not enough, because I feel like Black history is American history. Mm-hmm. And this is the kind of the stories that you can't tell anywhere else because of the unique American experience and the unique sort of American cultural understanding about race and those kind of things. So
the shortest month of the year doesn't really cover it.
No, the shortest month of the year doesn't really cover it.
Well, we see something repeated in several of these 9 stories that you tell in this book. It is an American story. Racism doesn't just happen in the South, you know,
right,
where there's slavery. It follows many of these figures up north, because many of them do come from the South to the North.
Right.
Followed by these characters of these crows.
Yeah.
So, okay, obviously, we've got this visual language of Jim Crow. It looks like, to my eye. I'd love to hear about your process of sort of turning these ideas into images.
So one of my favorite books is To Kill a Mockingbird, but not for the race issue. And it's because the entire book is sort of a microcosm of one scene. And it's the scene when old Jim, the dog, is mm-hmm. walking up the street. And it's the dog that everyone loved. And everyone knew this dog. Well, Scout calls her dad and he comes out and the sheriff is there. And the sheriff can't shoot him. The sheriff can't shoot the dog because he's not as good as Atticus. So Atticus has to be the person who has to shoot the dog and put the dog out of its misery. And it's a metaphor for the entire town. Like, that's the town as a microcosm of the entire book. And I wanted to do something similar to that with the crows. I wanted you to look at a crow and think of, you know, a murder. A murder of crows is a crowd of crows. So that's a murder, right? And then they're chasing these people. And they're also Jim Crow. And so I'm taking him and I'm turning him into the racist and see how Jim Crow is actually attacking these people. And so I was thinking about that extended metaphor, and it's common in comics. There's a lot of things you can do in comics that you can't do in any other visual language. It's almost like you can take an image and you can embody it with the history of that image so that when people look at it, it's almost like a hieroglyphic. You get everything that that's supposed to be in that one image. And that's what I was trying to do with the crows.
One of the things that was shocking to me is not only learning about all these figures, and you have Alexander Crummell in New Canaan, New Hampshire.
Yes.
So not only are these stories like so surprising to learn them, but to learn that there is actually history of African-American life in New Hampshire. And one of them, Richard Potter. Can you tell us a little bit about this character?
Yeah, Richard Potter is sort of amazing. He was at one point considered probably the most successful American entertainer. He was born in Massachusetts. There's some haziness about where he was born. He was born about 1780s to this wealthy white man who actually educated him and at one point sent him to Europe. So he traveled to Europe for a while. When he came back, he started performing magic and he started performing these shows. And the way I try to set the story up is that his biggest illusion is to trick everybody into thinking that he was white, or he would say he was East Indian. Mm-hmm. There's a thing that magicians do naturally, which is lie. I mean, they do. Like if you go up to a magician and you say, I saw you make a whole car disappear on stage, they're going to say, yes, you did, because that's just what they do. And so there are a lot of stories about him that, like, he crawls into an oven with a ham. He comes out and ham's cooked. There's these amazing stories of him doing the Indian rope trick, which, and by what I found out, is that no one has ever done the Indian rope trick.
Tell us what that is.
That's when you take the rope up in the air and you climb the rope and you disappear at the top.
His wife used to climb it.
Yeah.
Right?
But he's like, you know, he came to New Hampshire and he bought a big plot of land. He bought a house and he lived his life. And, you know, and then Potter's Place is named after him because I think most of it was his estate. Mm-hmm. But he was this amazing person. And I always tell people, like, if I'm ever outside of New Hampshire and I'm talking about the book, I'm like, I live in New Hampshire. And so when I left, I significantly decreased the black population by leaving. So you can imagine what it was like for Richard Potter in the early 1800s when he was doing shows all up and down the East Coast.
Historical figures become the stuff of legends, right?
Yeah.
You know, we learn all this stuff. I'd love to get to Bass Reeves. People say, oh, he left a silver coin everywhere he went, or, you know, all of these other sort of legendary ideas.
You know, Bass Reeves was a former slave who got into a fight with a slave owner, punched him, and then ran away and lived in the Indian Territory. And he was there for a few years, and then he joined the Union as an irregular. And so he fought in the Union Army for a little bit, and then he left the Army and became a scout and slash posse man for the U.S. Marshals. Judge Isaac Parker, who was known as the hanging judge or the lynching judge because he lynched so many people, had an idea that most of the outlaws in the Indian Territory were white. And so the Indians didn't trust white men, whether they were outlaws, whether they were peacekeepers, didn't trust them. So he said, well, let's deputize black deputies. So Bass Reeves was one of them. And so Bass Reeves would go out into the Old West and he would come back with, you know, tons of criminals. He caught 4,000 criminals over the course of a 30-year period. And because some of his life, he would dress in disguises, he would leave a silver coin behind. And that's actually documented. There are people who say he's, you know, there are actual documented cases where people say he left a silver coin.
But what were some of the other legends about him?
Spit on a brick and break it in half. he was on a mission from God. They called him the Invincible Marshal. His eulogy is unbelievable. Like, there are these amazing stories about how what an upstanding person he was, how the law was really important to him. But then it was coupled with, you know, just a generation away from being a savage, you know, mm-hmm. sort of a thing. Mm-hmm. But he was a really remarkable individual. And he died in 1910 of natural causes. But he ended his life as a police officer. He was a police officer in Oklahoma. So one of the first black police officers there as well.
Joel Christian Gill is with us. He did the words and pictures for the graphic novel Strange Fruit, Uncelebrated Narratives from Black History. And we're getting just a taste of some of those. Well, some of the other stories, like Theophilus, if I'm saying that right, Theophilus Thompson, who was became a chess master.
Yeah.
Disappears. You know,
yes.
No one knows what happens to him. You know, these are the figures who were most marginalized in American history. So you can't find records. And I'm wondering if the graphic novel sort of offers you a whole way of telling stories that were never told before.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of what happens with comics, is that you can tell stories in such a way that can't be told in another medium. I had a friend of mine who's a historian who said, when you think about Thomas Jefferson or you think about Thomas Paine, you never think about what pants he's wearing, right? But I have to think about that. I have to think about what pants he's wearing, what room he's sitting in, what's his facial expression, you know, how the light's going to come into the room, what time of day it is. You have to think about all those things. And when you can do that all at one time, you can use all of those things to create a mood, you know, to create, you know, metaphor. You can make it darker in some places that I think you can't do in film. And then when you use visual language, you know, which is one of the things that I've been really working on, is how to use the N-word, right? Because a lot of times that's in there. And so what I've been doing is adding those racist caricatures of black people, because that's embedded with all of that information.
Right, you see the sort of big-lipped, mammy face kind of pickaninny kind of thing.
Yeah, and so I've been using those to sort of as, you know, like as a fill-in.
Right.
And when you look at that, It's like automatically you see that. You know what that means. You don't have to say it. I don't have to put in dash, dash, dash. I don't have to do anything. So here is this idea of the person that we're looking at. And here's the actual person that doesn't look anything like that. So it separates the person from those two things, mm-hmm. which you can't do in any other language. You can't do in any other media.
It's subtle and so effective. I just have to ask about the title, Strange Fruit, which is, of course, comes from this poem from Abel Mirapol. I think he was a Jewish teacher. Yep. Famously sung as a song by Billie Holiday, later Nina Simone. I've been thinking about it a lot. The lyrics have been running through my head this week, you know, and evokes kind of black bodies and off of poplar trees amid the magnolia blossoms. But these stories seem very opposite. They're about reviving something. They're about bringing life force into something. I'm just wondering why you chose the title.
I think about Strange Fruit. I did a painting in 2005, which was called Strange Fruit Harvested, and it was a self-portrait, and I had a noose around my neck, and it was frayed. And the painting, in a lot of ways, was saying things about how I'd lived in Boston. I grew up in the South, and I lived in Boston. And when I was in the South, I was never afraid to go anywhere, even though there was a Klan march in my town. And then when I moved to Boston, people are telling me, don't go to this neighborhood, don't go to that neighborhood. So this move from, you know, the South to this bastion of liberalism, and I'm all of a sudden afraid to go places because of my color of my skin. So, you know, I was thinking about that, how far we've come, but how far we still have to go. And a friend of mine told me that my paintings were trying to tell stories and they were failing, which is not something that you want to hear. But that painting was the most successful one that I had done in that show. And it prompted me to go back and look at comics. And so I thought about the metaphor of Strange Fruit and how, you know, I'm touching on something, but then I'm turning it on its head. So if you think about, you know, that tree and those black bodies, I'm thinking about a different kind of tree and a different kind of black bodies in a way that these are different stories. These are stories that are on the tree of American history, but they are, you know, they're at the different places. They're falling off the tree. They're somewhere else. You have to go looking for them. So if you have to pick them up. So I'm connecting those two things in a way, but at the same time, I'm trying to turn that idea on its head. These are stories that are strange, and they are the fruit of American history, and they also are part of this sort of American society and cultural understanding about race. And so that's why I chose the title Strange Fruit.
Well, so much rich material. I'm thinking that volume 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 are soon to follow. Joel Christian Gill, I want to thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Joel Christian Gill is Associate Dean of Student Affairs at New Hampshire Institute of Arts. He is also said to be the Chairman, CEO, President, Director of Development, Majority and Minority Stockholder, Manager, Co-Manager, Regional Manager, Assistant to the Regional Manager, et cetera, of Strange Fruit Comics. You can see a couple panels yourself from Strange Fruit, Uncelebrated Narratives from Black History, Words and Pictures by Joel Christian Gill. We'll have a link on our website, wordofmouthradio.org.